The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
With the full reopening of society just around the corner and COVID-19 showing no signs of going anywhere, questions remain about how we can mitigate the dangers of the ongoing pandemic. One significant approach is the use of antiviral drugs, which have been used with varying degrees of success to treat the virus. So how useful a tool might these be, and could they be used to combat future viruses? Well, I'm joined now by Dr. Richard Kaczynski, Chief Medical Officer of AI Pharma Global Holdings, a biopharmaceutical company focused on drug development for infectious diseases. And this company recently relocated its headquarters to Dublin. Richard, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you.
Tell me a little bit about your company and your decision to locate a headquarters in Dublin.
So AI Pharma is a company that's working very closely with Fujifilm Toyama Chemicals, which is the company that manufactures and developed the oral antiviral drug that we'll be discussing this morning.
And your company, it's located now in Dublin. And to what end? How many people are you employing?
I think right now we have a core team with very few members. We're numbering a little over 15. And this team is based in Dublin, of course, in Ireland, because we felt that Ireland would serve as a very strategic launching point for the drug in Europe and across the world.
Now, this drug is called favipiravir. I think that's how you might say it, Avijan, and it's an antiviral. Tell me something of its history.
So back, I mean, there's quite a bit of history to this, and I'll try to keep this as short as possible. You know, regarding my personal history with the drug, back in 2019, the Democratic Republic of the Congo was experiencing the second most deadly Ebola outbreak in world history. As a medical advisor to the DRC, I was tasked with the mission of developing a strategy to help protect frontline healthcare workers and fighting Ebola in the community. So this is a strategy that we're trying to mimic with COVID-19. Now, with oral antivirals, we're basically trying to accomplish three things. At the individual patient level, we're trying to prevent disease progression in that individual. So if a patient is coming in and is tested positive for COVID-19, but is only presenting with mild symptoms, we want to keep that patient in that mild state and prevent that patient from moving on into more severe forms of disease, which will require hospitalization or even worse. Secondly, at the community level, what we're trying to do is we're trying to prevent onward transmission of the disease by keeping the virus in check in those individual patients and limiting that viral load. Third, by reducing the onward progression and onward transmission of disease in the communities, we're hoping that drugs like favipiravir will enable us to prevent the collapse of our healthcare systems during surge periods where we have a rapid influx of patients.
Now, the drug has been used in Asia, I believe, quite significantly. What sort of trials are needed or required in order for this drug to be made available in the European theater of operations?
That's a great question. Most of the studies that we've conducted to date, and we've seen numerous studies conducted all over the world, but just in answer to your question, the type of study that is required to actually make it possible for the European authorities or even the US authorities or authorities elsewhere to approve this drug would be to properly conduct a double-blind randomized controlled trial. That would be one of the benchmarks that we would set for ourselves.
So where are we at? Given that the drug has been deployed elsewhere, where are we with those trials that will be required to get licensing for Europe and the United States?
So at present, we have a unique study that's being conducted in North America, and this is being conducted by a company called Apili. And this trial has already completed recruitment. They are currently in the process of cleaning the data and doing the data analysis. We're hoping to hear the results of that double-blind RCT sometime very soon, hopefully this month or maybe even early next month.
We saw recently the announcement by Merck of their antiviral drug, and that they are seeking emergency authorization for its use in the United States. They, as you know, they stopped the trial. It was so successful that they could no longer justify not giving the drug to those who made up the cohort who were going to get a placebo rather than the drug. So how do you compare with the Merck product? Is it the same sort of chemical methodology?
Yes, that's a great question. The two drugs in question do target the same enzyme, which is the RDRP, the RNA-dependent RNA polymerase. So basically what that does is it throws a wedge into the copy machine mechanism within the virus that allows itself to copy its viral genome. So I think the similarities are numerous. Where the two drugs differ is the operational experience that our drug has in the exo communities and on the global market. To date, we've already treated more than 1.5 million patients globally with this drug. We have a very well-established safety profile. And this is not just in a controlled manner, but most recently, the world's largest post-marketing surveillance study was conducted, which showed, in fact, that the drug is very safe to use, and also it's efficacious. So we're very excited about this sort of real-world data.
Now, to what extent is it approved for a particular virus as distinct from, say, the coronavirus that gives rise to COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2? I mean, does your drug in Asia, in Japan, for example, have approval for COVID or for flu or for what range of viruses?
Right. So the original indication for the drug, and again, this is a drug that was designed and developed in Japan. The indication that was initially assigned for this drug back in March of 2014 was for new or re-emergent influenza. So that was the original indication as far as Japan is concerned. So after, you know, after the pandemic started, a number of countries, namely China, Russia, Indonesia, India, et cetera, rapidly started to look at data, and they really kind of got ahead of the curve in approving this drug earlier than many other nations.
It's been around a while, so to what extent is it running out of time on its patent and will become available as by various manufacturers around the world as a generic?
Right. That's really an important point to drive forward. The fact that this drug is off patent allows us to produce this drug for a much cheaper price point. And this is great. The economics of the drug are one thing, but the fact that we can produce this drug, it's a small molecule compound, we can stamp it out in massive droves, and the drug is stable across a spectrum of environmental conditions, which makes it ideal for us to actually go in and use this drug on communities that are not as blessed with the modern facilities. So, for example, in our experiences with Africa, we were always and frequently experiencing blackouts. There was always an issue with cold chain management systems, and I think that's where antibody treatments and also largely the mRNA vaccines that we currently have at our disposal are going to face extreme challenges in these environments.
But to be quite clear, this drug is a pill, and it's stable at room temperature. So therefore, absolutely, the deployment of it would be very straightforward. And the cost, you're saying, will be low. You're not in any way, I know, down on vaccines. You're all in favor of vaccines because I saw someone in the United States yesterday talking about the Merck product and saying, look, why would you want to try to cure something if you can use a vaccine to stop you getting it in the first place?
Right. Absolutely. Just going to your question. We are absolutely in favor of vaccines. And, you know, vaccines have basically served as the cornerstone of containment-based strategies across the globe. And, you know, while the benefits of vaccines have become abundantly clear, unfortunately, so have the limitations. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to offer another extra layer of protection. Vaccines do a wonderful job at preventing infection, at preventing severe disease, and also hospitalizations, and even death. What we're trying to do is increase the odds of survival in our patients, but we're trying to do so in a fashion that is more that's more akin to the average patient. So basically, imagine yourself when you get influenza. When you get influenza, you go to the doctor. The doctor tells you to get plenty of fluids, get plenty of rest, and they may prescribe an anti-influenza drug. And that's what we should be doing in the fight against COVID-19. I think our community-based strategies are fundamentally flawed in that we're currently telling patients that come to the outpatient clinic and test positive for COVID-19 to go home if they're still at a mild stage of disease or asymptomatic stage of disease. Now, this community-based strategy may work for somebody who's in their 20s or early 30s without any risk factors. But this is time and time again shown to be a flawed strategy when we hear the news about a 50-something-year-old or a 60-something-year-old that was at the clinic, diagnosed, but asymptomatic, was told to go home and died 3 days later or 4 days later. You know, these are, in my mind, these are preventable deaths. And if we can prevent these deaths from occurring with a simple pill, I think that really is, it's a no-brainer in my mind.
Now, I presume it's like an antibiotic that you have to take the full course of pills. It's not just a one-off miracle pill. So what would you anticipate would be the cost of a full course of this drug?
So I think this all depends on where the drug is going to be manufactured for a specific marketing region. But just for the sake of argument, we're assuming that the cost of the drug per course of treatment will be approximately $300 to maybe $350 per patient.
Okay, which
this
is
would about, be for the European markets and the U.S. market.
That's about half, I think, what Merck are proposing for their drug, or
yes,
has been suggested
correct.
For their drug. A couple of questions from our listeners. What research was done as to the side effects? That's from Paul. There was some mutterings about embryonic defects in animals who were tested with this. What can you tell me?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a great point of concern. And I'm glad that that question was asked. We do ask that because of those initial animal tests that were conducted that did show the risks of teratogenicity or fetal toxicity, that we ask the patients, especially pregnant women, we ask that, you know, pregnant women do not take the drug. They are contraindicated from taking the drug. And this is a very important point. For women of childbearing potential, we do require a negative pregnancy test to be conducted before we initiate treatment with favipiravir. We also do ask that if you absolutely must engage in sexual activities with your partner, you use contraceptive methods during and for 7 days after the end of treatment. So this is an absolute must. What I would add on top of that, and this is backed up by real world data based on the more than 1.5 million patients that we've used this drug to combat COVID-19, is we've educated our physicians very clearly on this fact. And thanks to that, we've been able to maintain a very safe legacy. Of the more than 1.5 million patients that have received this drug today, we have zero documented cases of fetal toxicity or embryonic deaths that have occurred in human cases. So we're very proud of that fact, and we hope to maintain that legacy through proper education of both patients and healthcare providers.
All right, look, thank you very much for joining us and introducing us to this potential lifesaver for those who are diagnosed with COVID-19 and who are in the early stages and who have the possibility of developing a serious case of it. The antivirals may well offer a very potent solution. Dr. Richard Kaczynski, Chief Medical Officer for AI Pharma Global Holdings, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.